All right, welcome to the Utah Puck Report. I'm your host, Jay Stevens. We've got with us today Evan Stofflett.
Good to be here again, as always. I got to think of something new to say at the beginning, though, so I'll start working on that this week.
Yeah, just study some other co-host moves.
Yeah.
And if you're going to study, then I should probably study. I should learn some actual host moves.
Might help.
Today we're going to do kind of a we're going to do a couple parts of a theme, and because I get a lot of feedback, and it's funny, I get the thing I get asked more and more and more is one, why do I have to send my kid away to play hockey? How do I know if they're ready? What age is the best age, and where do I send them? And what, how old were you when you left your parents to play hockey?
So I kind of had a, I guess, a buffer when my dad got transferred out to Salt Lake. I was out here for 7th and 8th grade, and then I went back to Wisconsin to live with my grandparents for 2 years. So it was kind of half in, half out, where I still had a lot of family around. But then when I was 16, I went on my own to start playing junior. So maybe that two-year tryout period was kind of on my own a bit, but I still had a lot of supervision that my family knew.
All right. We've brought in a very special guest, Angelo Ricci. Angelo, are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm here. How are you?
I'm good, man. I can't thank you enough for taking time to be on the show. So you are in Philadelphia right now?
Yeah, we just got done with practice. We played Washington tomorrow, so it's we're excited. I'm in Philly right now, though. It's snowing, actually.
Oh. Oh, yeah. I just saw all the stuff of the cold front coming in, and it's going to be the Arctic blast. Yeah. So what's your role with the Flyers now?
Well, I'm actually, they hired me. I got hired by Elaine Vigneault and Chuck Fletcher this summer as their skills coach for the NHL team, and I'll work with Lehigh, their minor league team, as well at times. So I'm enjoying that. I was a consultant with Buffalo for about almost 5 years before, and I've been working with, like, you know, NHL guys, pro guys for a long, long time, since about 2003.
Right.
So it's just it's just come to a whole other level now in terms of the training and what the guys put in off the ice and the off. And then now, you know, hockey was really far behind in terms of hiring guys like specialty-type coaches, because football, basketball, baseball, they all had those, and now hockey's finally starting to get it. And I think within the next 5 years, every team's going to have one or two skills coaches within their organization for sure.
Yeah, it seems like it's taken hockey a long time to catch on to that, because you're right, and maybe it is because the NFL has endless money, but they,
exactly.
They've got, like, you know, everybody has a special coach, then plus they have like two of the psychologists on board, and whatever they can do to hopefully, you know, eke out one more win, they're willing to do. Well, hockey, you're just kind of on your own.
Yeah, it's all about competitive advantage. I'm learning, and I'm learning a lot. It's actually really incredible experience. And, you know, when you're doing something the same thing for so long, and you try to change it up to come into this environment and work with Mike Michel Therrien, Mike Yeo, Ian LaPerriere, you know, Elaine Vigneault, you know, it's really, and then even Scott Gordon in the minor league, he's a really good coach. So it's great to collaborate with these guys and our development staff as well, the player development staff. So you learn a lot, and I'm learning a lot of the scientific side of stuff, the approach of training too. So it's pretty interesting.
That is interesting. In fact, we could dedicate a whole show just to learning about that. But
you could.
The funny thing, the reason we brought you in is kind of we're kind of going back on your history here. You were with the Colorado Thunderbirds, correct?
Well, they're still my program, yes. I'm still the executive director, and I help when I'm back in town, because I fly back and forth a lot. So I'm still helping the Thunderbirds all the time. They're my program. So, yeah, that will never go away.
Oh, wow. I didn't know you were still – okay, so that makes sense. So that's why I wanted you on the show, and is because you're the other aspect of it. I can talk a little bit about how we tried to get kids ready, and, you know – For my part, I always look to see if the kid was skill ready. Like, okay, is this kid good enough to get out of Utah? And then when he was, I would start texting people that I knew through my Shattuck connections. And then, you know, you're like it's like the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. You're with Shattuck being Kevin Bacon. You were one of my degrees from Kevin Bacon. So I would text Jordan, or I would text Zach Parise, or I'd text those guys, and that's how I find out, like, start getting players on your radar. And then your role there, you were kind of, was there a while that you were like Joe Sakic's boss, Adam Foote's boss?
We had an incredible staff there. We had Ken Klee, you know, Milan Hayduk, Jan Hayda, Pierre Turgeon, Joe Sakic, Adam Foote, Ken Klee.
Wow.
There was just, yeah, tons of guys. It was even Curtis Lecision before they went up and then moved back to Canada to get his kid in the dub and stuff. So we've been fortunate to have those guys around. So Joe worked for me a little. No, I'm just kidding. But Joe's a great guy, and he really he believes in skill development big time. So it's really neat to see. And Joe's and I are in the same. Not just Joe, but Adam, Pierre. We're all in the same belief. You know that your kids don't need to leave home unless they're absolutely ready and there's nothing left for them in terms of their development side. If they have an opportunity, like it was my program, if they're going to come to my program, we're going to take a kid on the 16 team if they're a top six forward, if they're a top two or three D-man, if they're number one goalie. Because there's no reason for me to take an out-of-town kid to fill in, you know, a third, fourth line role or a four, five, six defenseman. To me,
okay, because that's actually one of the questions. I don't mean to cut you off, but that's actually one of the questions that we get all the time is, all right, so I have a kid that's pretty good here, and we think he's good, and is there a benefit to him staying here? All right, say you look at him, he's going to be a third or fourth line guy. And you'd rather see him stay here and develop as a first line guy and, like, say double A, as opposed to coming to you and develop in practice and be a third or fourth line guy?
No. I mean, here's what I would say. A young man like that might have other options. Like, if he didn't make the Thunderbirds, he might be able to make another Tier 1 program in our state, right? So there's other options where he could potentially make their roster and be a top six guy, right? Or a top defenseman. But if you're looking at our program strictly, the Thunderbirds, I think I would weigh that option. And if he was eligible to play 15s, but he was a 16, you know, he tried out for 16s, we would maybe talk about playing on the 15 team. I think you just got to see. What I would do with kids we're really interested in that are from out of town where I've been contacted on, I like to get them to, you know, come to Colorado before tryouts just so I can get to know them a little, or our staff can get to know them. Also get to see them interact with the players. Because it's not just about the playing ability. That stuff comes along. It's all about interacting with new teammates, a new environment, the social side, the athletic side, the academic side. There's so many factors that play into us taking a player, and also the family committing to come to us and, you know, having a comfortable home, a billet family, and an academic situation. So there's so many factors that you look at with these young men. You know, like Dylan Gambrell, for example, we didn't know who he was. I got a call ages ago. That Pierre Turgeon was coach with me that year, and like literally after one tryout, he had like four or five goals. We're like, who is this kid? We kept watching him, and after the second tryout, we offered him a spot, and we said, like, you need to come, you know, like you. And obviously, he just became a, you know, now he's in the NHL with San Jose. But it's just neat how you find gems like that, right? And I don't recommend young kids to leave home if they have stuff in their backyard. But like if you're in Seattle right now, there's not a lot going on, like in terms of midget AAA. I'm sure it's going to happen now with the team going there in a couple of years. You know, Utah, it depends on all the areas what they have to offer too, right? And the key is, you know, you're going to get better in practice, and that's where you're going to develop.
Yeah, and it seems like – so Utah's making progress. With the Dursos and their West Coast Renegades program being – I think they're committed, and I think it's for the right reasons. And I think that they're bringing in good coaches, and now – As we were talking about, Jordan Friese's involved with that. I think Evan's in town more, and Evan's going to be he's helping out here and there with Outliers. And are you helping out with West Coast?
Yeah, they're U16 team.
All right, so
nice.
So we're getting guys that have played and that have been away, and so I think we're getting more options. But forever, and I joke around about it. But when I put a Facebook post out when we first knew we were going to get this podcast, I'm like, what should we name a Utah hockey podcast? And Adam Bartholomew said, you should name it The Road to Colorado, because that was our thing, right? That's if you look at our players that have gotten out of here, and including Mason Manick, you know, Manick's the most recent one, but that goes back to both the Truscott had to play there, and Trevor Lewis played in Colorado.
Oh, Nick Hollerin.
Yeah, both Hollerins. I think both Hollerins played in Colorado. So
what's funny with Hollerin, you know, he played on our 15 team. I cut him from our 16 team, which was probably a huge mistake because he would have helped us the second half of the year. But he's a young man. It actually worked for him, right? So I cut him because we were loaded that year with players. And so he went to the Rampage, which was great. And even Frank Sartori and I talked about it. I think it helped take his game to the next level and be responsible on certain other areas of his game. And he's a heck of a player now. And just like even getting cut from us after playing for the Thunderbirds for 1 year, he found a great home at the Rampage, really became a heck of a player. And now he's, you know, one of the top offensive threats in college hockey, I think, in his junior year.
Yeah.
So it's pretty neat to see a guy like that because he stuck with it. And even though he got, you know, after he played on our 15 team, he got cut from the 16 team, but still persevered and came through it. And I think it teaches the guys a lot about that.
Yeah, for sure. And that's part of the maturity thing we wanted to talk about. Evan, you go from Salt Lake, Wisconsin, and now you're in – you played in the – what was the first league you were in, junior league?
It was the America West Hockey League, which they banded with the North American League, and then now I think the teams that I played on and against in Montana and maybe the NA3. I'm not sure if any of them even are around anymore.
Right, but. So that was a stepping stone. But between that as a young man and then your first year in the USHL, did you struggle with being homesick? Did you see other guys that maybe had the talent but didn't have the mental stability to stay with you?
On my America West team, everyone else was older, pretty much 18, 19, like the standard thing. So I was the only one there. And then when I went to Des Moines in the USHL, I think they maybe did some homework and picked guys that weren't going to be an issue and weren't going to be a problem because everyone did good in school. Everyone ended up going and playing Division I. And I never really ran into people that had a hard time on my teams with that.
So, Angelo, how do you vet this out? How are you able to bring a player in and say, man, this kid has talent. Now, do you have a questionnaire? Do you talk to their family? Have you ever had a player that you knew that their family was going to be the issue?
Oh, absolutely. I would say the issue, just more concerns because they're sending away their child at an age where. And I think age is important too. Like even if you're a stud at 14s, unless there's absolutely nothing there, I don't think you need to leave home until 15s. But I could see some kids leaving home at 14s. But I do understand, like at 15s, it's a necessity now in terms of if you're good enough to play against great competition. But I think, I mean, questionnaires, yeah, we have stuff they fill out. But the most important thing to me is when you sit face to face with the family and the kid, and they, like, we have a Kim Fino handles all of our housing stuff and billeting, so we make sure the mom and the dad are comfortable with her, talk to her about, you know, any special, you know, needs or stuff that the kids may have in terms of, you know, their diet or different things like that, because, you know, like there's one kid we had, it's just weird, right? You couldn't have peanuts at all, and so this one, he couldn't go to this one house because the kids, they just had a lot of peanut butter. Like, it was just weird. Like, you learn different things, right?
Yeah.
And so you learn about, like, little things like that, how to handle it, and or obviously they have, like, you know, the children, and also you don't want to put teenage boys with teenage girls in houses. There's, like, little things you look at. So there's just a lot of things, and Kim Fino does a great vetting process with all that. And so I think it's funny, like, I'll talk to the player, and the dad will be excited, but then you got to get over the hurdle with the mom a lot of times. And usually Kim comes in and talks to her, and as a family, to make an educated decision if this is the right move. So it's a process, and it's never easy. I mean, when I grew up, you didn't need to leave home, though. I was from Chicago. I am from Chicago, and I left home at, you know, my senior year in high school to play in the USHL, and that's usually when people used to leave. Now it's like they're leaving at 15, 16 years old, if you're really good, 16 years old. So, you know, I left as a senior. Most guys sometimes leave as sophomores now and stuff, so it just depends, but... And also, you didn't have guys committing at 15, 16, 17 years old. They used to, I mean, no one committed to almost until they were like halfway through their senior year and after. And
right.
You know, in junior hockey in those days. So it has changed a lot. But I think, you know, the most important thing is the young man, the player's got to feel comfortable with the players, with the coach, with the living arrangements. There's a lot of than just playing hockey. Because if you put a young man, no matter how talented he is, on even the best team, if he's in a poor living condition, if he needs a poor academic thing, you know, if you put him with a host family that lives an hour away from the rink every day, that's not going to be very conducive to success to a new kid dealing with academics and sitting in a car 2 hours a day. So there's a lot of things I think you look at. And you know, another thing I've learned over the years, and it's hard to take kids from, we get some kids from Minnesota and stuff like that, but it's hard to take kids from extreme to East Coast stuff, and not that we wouldn't want any ever. But it's funny. You get the quality of just where you grew up in your environment. Like in Colorado, it's always sunny, right? So when guys are in Colorado and then they go out east, a lot of them like to come back because they're like, where's the sun? You know what I mean? It's just different yeah. living. It's just funny living in. So you got to deal with those type of things too. And you just learn a lot about, you know, finding the right situation. Have we been wrong? Have we been incorrect? Absolutely. Have we had to change billets? Have we had to let, you know, kids maybe they decide to go back home or go to another program within the year? Yes, it's happened. But I think, you know, no one's ever perfect in any of these situations, but you try to do the best you can to vet the process and make sure you find the right home and the right team for the young man.
Yeah, and sometimes people just don't know what they're getting themselves into either, and you don't know, like, a couple examples for me is with, you know, I say it all the time, people probably get sick of hearing it, but my daughter's at West Point. And West Point was not an easy decision to make, and it definitely was not an easy school to get into. And West Point has a couple stages where they know they're going to lose a lot of students. And the first one is obviously because if you get into West Point, you have to go through basic training first. And basic training, you know, has always weeded some people out, and it's hard, and it is what it is. And that weeds some guys out. But the second part that weeds people out is the first Christmas break. And keep in mind, so out of the 20,000 applicants or whatever, only 1,200 total students can get in. And they know that at Christmas time, they're going to lose 50 to 100 students that come home and see what home life is still like and see their friends that are also in college and don't have to, you know, wake up every morning at 5:30 a.m. and be in formation and do all this Army stuff. And they're like, you know what, I like what my friends are doing, which is nothing, or going to college for 4 hours a day. So they know at that point they're going to lose a bunch of students. And I can see, if you're a hockey player, I also had a kid. So for a few years, I would go around and I would help find players from here, and I would send video or whatever to JP Parisi at Shattuck. And then we would pull, and then I would do the recruiting part here. And one of the players I had, we did it. We went through everything and we got him in. He was a great fit. He got there. His mom goes to visit. Goes into his dorm and is cleaning up and finds that he's got Playboy magazine. You know, he's got Playboy magazine, or one of the kids had it under their beds or whatever. And now she thinks Shattuck is the worst place in the world. And so now she wants him out of prep school. And she pulls him out because of that. And I'm like, it doesn't matter where you send a kid, there are going to be those things. She thought, because, you know, in her mind, here in Utah, there was never a negative influence in this kid's life. This kid turned out to be a college hockey player, by the way. So he came out and had to restart. He ended up in the British Columbia League and then actually had a great college career. So, but it's just one of those things where you never know what obstacles you're going to come across. And these kids think they're ready. Or another thing that you've probably had to have seen this is the kid's ready. The parents are 100% ready, but the kid doesn't really have the drive or the desire.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he doesn't want to leave home. He wants to just play hockey with his friends. And, you know, that's as far as he wants to go. But his dad sees the NHL on the other side of the board.
No, absolutely. I mean, the kid's got it. And you can vet those pretty soon, or you know pretty quickly within a few weeks of the season if that kid's going to even survive it. We've had kids, you know, leave within a few weeks, but usually, you know, knock on wood, we've been pretty good. You know, I've been doing this for 23 years now, and you know, coaching AAA since 2002. So, I've seen a lot, and I've seen the times change. Where, and part of the issue too, I see, and I should say it's an issue, but it's great for the kids to give them opportunities. But we have too many teams in Colorado. We should have three max tier one organizations. We have four. We had five. Now we're down to four, which is good. We should be at three. And what happens is it just even allows our state to take outside kids or even in-state kids that shouldn't even be playing tier one. And so it just has a residual impact on everything too. So I think the landscape needs to be correct. So the player, man or woman, because even the boy or girl, now we have a girls program too, Team Colorado, and they take out of town girls too. So, I mean, it's, you got to be in the right situation, and it's hard to say. And to me, it's all about a comfort level with your head coach, with the players, and then with the host family. And those are the three, you know, the triangles are the trigger points to me. You know, if you're good with the coach, if you feel good with the team, and if you have a good host family, those three connect usually in the middle. You have your parents, you have your, you know, all your support staff, and it usually works out then. But they got to be, they all got to be on the same page.
I would like, what would your advice be to, I guarantee there are moms and dads listening right now that are weighing these options, that know their kid is there. What are you going to tell them that, okay, these are the things to look for to see if your kid's actually ready to go?
Well, the first thing I would say is it's most important that you visit where you want to potentially play. Don't just go somewhere without visiting. It's just like in college, usually, right? You go on a recruiting visit, or if you're playing in a junior, you know, like in the CHL, you're going to go visit Kelowna or whoever drafted you or signed you or whatever it might be. You're going to visit and see if you're even comfortable living there. So I think that's the most important thing to me is, you know, have your mom or dad or the child go with you. Do some research. Make sure the team's competitive. The coach is good. The coach moves players on, doesn't hold players back. Make sure they're in a competitive schedule. They have a competitive schedule. Check out their, you know, how much on-ice practice and off-ice training they do. Do they do video work? So, I mean, there's a lot of factors looking at what's the school district like you'd be living in. Is it a good school? Are they good with kids that miss school? Because AAA hockey, you do miss a lot of school. So I think there's, you know, those are the things you should look at when you're evaluating, is it the right move? And after all that, I would never recommend, unless 100% sure this is what you want to do, after you visit one place, you make a team. If the team gives you 24 hours or 12 hours or 2 days, take that time, go back, fill out a list of pros and cons of both sides, staying, going, playing for this organization over this organization. To me, it usually puts itself on, you know, right in front of your face once you write stuff down and digest it.
Yeah.
You know, I always tell my players, you know, you want to play with emotion, but don't play emotionally. So don't make a decision out of emotion. Think through it. You know what I mean? You want to have emotion within your decision, but don't make an emotional decision. Does that make sense? So you want to have some passion about something, but don't think, you know, this is what you have to do first option. Maybe you have a second option that might be better. And where does the coach see you on your depth chart? I know, like, I'm never going to promise a kid, but I'm going to tell him, you know, this is where I'd see him. And, you know, it's funny, you talk about Parisi, and you know what amazes me about Zach is, and I, you know, I'll tell the story all the time to players that Zach and I were sitting at Shattuck one summer. We were doing some skill stuff at a camp there, and we were just in the cafeteria, and I asked Zach why he chose North Dakota over Minnesota. And he goes, you know, obviously, you know, both places are phenomenal places to play college hockey. But he said, what I like what North Dakota said to me and Dean Blaze, he said, they didn't promise me anything. He said, I had the opportunity, I had to go there and prove myself. And I felt that, to me, that's because he's a work ethic guy. Like, he puts the work in, Zach. And to me, that's what sold me. Like, it was amazing to hear that when, you know, a lot of organizations, I don't know if Minnesota did it, but they could promise kids, like, you're going to be first power play unit. You're going to be this. You're going to be that. Dean Blaze didn't promise Zach anything. He just said, and that's what urged me to go there and felt the right situation was for me, just because I knew I had to earn everything I got. And, I mean, obviously he was confident in his abilities.
Right.
And it paid off for him. But, I mean, that to me, that's just an amazing young man and a mature young man. But JP raised his boys that way. And, I mean, they you know, it's God rest his soul, he's an amazing human being. It was pretty neat to hear Zach tell that story. And he told a little more in depth, but just the gist of it, you know, nothing was promised to me. I had to go earn it. And that's what a lot of us forget about. We want everything handed to us, these young men, and, you know, for this and that. But I'm in this, you know, with working with these guys now at the NHL level, and you should see the work they put in. Like, it is that with their body before practice, after practice. You know, we got here today at 10 o'clock. I worked with three guys before practice. Then I had another nine guys after practice, and now they're all waiters, and we play tomorrow. And so it's amazing to see the commitment. You know, people can say yes, this and that. They get paid millions of dollars. All that's true, but you still have to do the right things to get another contract, to get an opportunity. And it's pretty neat to see firsthand, day in and day out, the way a Claude Giroux carries himself, you know, the way guys like that take care of Nishkin, and what an amazing defenseman and just a professional he is.
Yeah, well, and that's one of the things, and people mention it, they talk about it, they're like, man, the NHL is so much faster, and these kids are so much stronger, and the hits seem like they're more devastating now, and I don't understand how hockey's changed, and that's how it's changed, is these kids, the work these guys put in, and the... I skated yesterday morning. I was with the Utah Grizzlies, and just being in the locker room and seeing this is my 20th year, and seeing the transformation and seeing these kids now, man, they come in and they are built.
Oh,
and
yeah, oh yeah.
They get
ready.
They get on the ice and they're not just skating laps, shooting pucks in the net. They're doing, you know, duck walks and you know, or mohawks or whatever you call them, and they're working on stick handling in a phone booth. And I was lucky enough to see a little bit of the training that Claude Lemieux did with Austin Matthews and with his kid. You saw some of that too. I mean, mm-hmm. Claude Lemieux had stuff here too where he'd run those camps, and you're watching these drills that he's running the kids through, and you're like, man, that's like superhuman stuff.
I worked at 2 years in a row with Mark Ciaccio and I.
Oh yeah,
we did it in Park City with Claude Lemieux. I think it was 2 years, maybe one. I can't remember what it was. So long ago.
Yeah,
it was great actually. It was the one I did there was in Park City. It was pretty cool with Brendan, his son, and. Yeah, I don't know if Austin was there. I can't remember. But it was, what's amazing to me is when you work with these guys, they're like the skill of the fourth line is insane compared to what it used to be. Right. They can all skate. They can all, it's just amazing to look at some of these guys and realize they're fourth line players now or not even in the lineup, but they're skilled as hell and can skate. But it also shows to tell you, there's still roles for the grinder guy, too. The guy, we signed a Chris Stewart, the Flyers did.
Oh, yeah.
And, he played in England last year, but he worked his way. He has a role on this team, and he understands it. And, it's great to see him at 32, 33 years old, because I talked to him today. I actually worked with him before practice. And he said, Stewie, is it hard because we're rolling right now? So they kept the same lineup, the past four or five games, whatever it's been. And he's like, Enzo, I just got to be ready. I know through 82 games I'm going to get my opportunities. And, just his attitude was refreshing instead of pouting about it. He put in the work and still to be ready when his number's called. But that's – a lot of people don't understand that. That's the hardest part, too, the mental side, to prepare yourself even when you're not in the lineup.
Right. And that's also one of those qualities that you want these kids to have that we're deciding if – is it – are they going to have the right mentality? Are they going to have that Zach Parise mentality to know that they need to earn it? I remember JP telling Zach – so when Zach first got drafted, and this is before the first lockout – Zach got like $1.3 million up front, and he got $1.3 million a year for 4 years. And then they ended up changing that and took money away from him, which was crazy. But when he first got that contract, I remember JP telling him, like, hey, you're not going out and buying – I can't do a French accent. I can't impersonate JP. But he's like, hey, you're not going to go out and buy a Cadillac Escalade and show up to work – show up to the rink the first day with – you're going to go buy something because you haven't earned any of that money yet. I don't care what you did in college and juniors. You got to go work and earn it now. And you
got
to earn it.
He got like an F-150, didn't he? Like a pickup truck.
He got a Chevy Colorado. That was,
I couldn't remember.
It was and it was 2 years old. And I just remember, I tell that story to a lot of kids every year in my hockey camps here. I'm like, this is what he did because he you hadn't earned it yet. There are other guys that show up here. First round draft picks show up here. And when we were the Dallas Stars AHL Farm Club, they show up in their $80,000 car with their $10,000 spinners, and it's like I'm not putting anybody out. Evan starts laughing because he knows who I'm talking about, but these guys show up, but in the eyes of their teammates, in the eyes of their coaches, they haven't earned that yet. But a guy that's like, I chose one college over another because they didn't promise me anything. I had to go in and work for it. Those are guys that that's quality guys. Those are the guys you want.
Oh yeah.
That's the type of guy you want to build your team around. That's the type of guy you want, that's hopefully what your son, that's what I hope my son would be. That's what you want in life.
Character. You want character players. And it's funny you said that because what's funny is after that year when he signed the contract, I asked JP, he goes, you believe this guy? We went to buy a cell phone and Zach made me pay for it. I go, you just signed for $1 million. You should buy your own cell phone because I'm still paying for it.
That's Zach. Zach was very tight with the purse strings till he got married. That's when she starts. That was pretty funny. But yeah, I remember the same thing. Like he made Jordan buy his own cereal to bring over to eat when they were training. Because Zach wouldn't stock the cupboards for him. So he's like, yeah, you're coming over to eat. You bring your own food.
I know, that's funny.
But the
work ethic, too. That's, as you know, if you don't have the drive to get better, it doesn't matter what environment you're in. And one thing we try to tell these parents, too, like when we go on the road, they have study hall. We collect their phones, their iPads at night. We make sure that they're there for hockey and getting their academics done. This isn't like just a vacation. And you're here to play hockey. You're here to get your studies done. You're here to stay dialed in, your sleep, your nutrition. So there's a lot of things that these kids that really want to buy into it can really accelerate it. And so when they do go to juniors, they're prepared for it. They're prepared from living away from home. They're prepared for doing laundry, maybe helping cook their own meals at times, like little things like that. I think that's what AAA hockey does help when they have to leave, preparing for, too, the next level of hockey, too.
Yeah, that's one of the things. It's totally different now, and that's it's hard as a parent, because if you grew up playing a certain way and you don't realize that it's changed, and you're like, oh, I'm doing what worked for me. I'm teaching my kid what worked for me. You don't realize that, hey, just because it worked for you 20 years ago and got you to the USHL or whatever league, you know, a lot of the parents around here think they know, and they didn't play anywhere. So they didn't even have anything that worked for them, but they think, all right, based on what I read this book from 20 years ago, this is how I'm going to raise my kid, and any coach that tells me otherwise. And Jordan was just saying the same thing yesterday. We were talking about he wants to blow some things up here in hockey and completely change the mindset, because you've got parents that are like, my son can't make practice today because today's a ski day. Or, you know, and he's like, I get that you want to have fun, and I get that, you know, he's coaching in Park City, and I get that, but man, if you're here, be committed to it. Come to every practice. Come with the work ethic. Come knowing that, all right, your next step, you're going to be playing for Angelo in Colorado, and they're not going to tolerate a ski day. You're not going to miss practice for that. That'll end your time on the team.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so, I mean, it will. I mean, you're right. I mean, absolutely. I think, you know, the hardest thing, too, is as you, I mean, when you went away from home or when Evan went away, don't you find the self-discipline, too? What I started is the beginning of the season, right? Like, until you get in the grind of the practice and the game and the travel, sometimes you get there and it's just academics for the first couple of weeks. Like, to me, that's where the homesick kicks in for these families, too, for the young men and women, is that, you know, they're not in a comfortable environment, right? And so it could snowball one way or the other, you know what I'm saying? And hopefully these kids do the right thing and have the right support system. And I think, I mean, do kids reach out to you still, Jay, like that have left Utah? And I mean, do you check in on how you're doing? You know, you're probably still a mentor to them and helping them get through the process sometime, I would assume.
Yeah, absolutely. And man, I enjoy that. I love being able to catch up with them and give them little you know, I didn't make it that far. So I have advice on what worked for me. But I love these kids that do still check in. And over the, man, it's been 20 years that I've been doing this now, and there have been a lot of kids that have gone out, and they do reach out. And I love being able to help them at that point, too. And then you're still part of the process, right? Like, for me, I get experience learning from what they're going through and trying to think my way through it as an adult. I think most people would call me an adult. Maybe. But anyway, I think after all these years, I've learned enough through watching these kids go through steps and watching some kids make mistakes and learning from, and again, like I said with that parent with Shattuck, I learned from then on out. I told parents up front, hey, they're going to be subjected to some stuff, right? So I've learned a little bit, and yeah, they reach out and when they're homesick. And for me, I remember, like, I never got homesick until my first year of junior college. So I'd already been through junior hockey, which was fine. But it's funny you brought up the academic part, because you get to junior college and you start school before we started hockey. And then, like, a couple weeks in, they're like, okay, now you're going to start doing this stuff. And I'm in the middle. Like, I went to Botno, North Dakota, which was horrible. And you talk about talk about visiting a place before you pick it to go. I did not visit that place. I just went because that, like, I had the great opportunity. If I would have visited it first, there's no way I would have gone there. But I ended up loving it. But, man, not having the entire team there at first and not knowing anybody and not knowing how to meet anybody, and you're in this strange place where it's just, I was the only kid from Utah there. And it's like, all right, so I got a little bit homesick, which was really weird for me because at first I had no issues leaving. But, man, the minute hockey started, here's 22 new friends. And then they knew somebody else on campus, and that started, that steamrolled, and that became my home. But before that, when it was just trying to figure out how to do college, that's when I was like, man, I'm not going to make it here.
That's kind of part of the process, too. For me, I remember, like, when I was a junior, my first year completely away, that first semester was tough, but you kind of learn what works, what doesn't work. And then once again, having some older guys, they kind of helped, you know, well, maybe try this, don't do that. And it's just was, that was part of the big learning experience that's kind of helped me you know, something that I learned then to kind of continue on and keep going. And I mean, that was one thing that really sticks out to me that I still use today that probably wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for hockey and being thrust into that situation.
And then when you got older, where did you turn around and see guys come in the program and be like, this guy needs my help?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, you never want to see someone struggle, especially if they're, you know, it's their first year away or whatever. If, you know, you've gone through that, and if you can help someone get through that, and then hopefully that, you know, it's a snowball effect. So it just kind of builds on the strength of the program and the strength of the people that you're with and working with. And it all works out for everyone in the end.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, Angela, you have been a phenomenal guest. Like, this has been exactly what I think the parents here need to hear, you know, need to understand as they're getting, because we're still sending kids off to Colorado all the time. And I get a ton of emails based on this show, and that's what I get more than anything is moms wondering what I know about the next step and whether that's, you know, leaving home or finding a better team or whatever. So I thought, I just knew you'd be the expert.
Yeah. I don't know about that. I just think it's experience, right? From a player to the director and coach now for 23 years, you just learn a lot. And we've made these wrong decisions and bad decisions too. But I think parents, as you know, and you've heard the phrase a million times, this whole process is not a sprint. Take your time. I mean, just like when you train for a marathon, you go through the process. This is the process. Don't rush things. Usually, find players we've told that are really good hockey players who've left and gone to, say, maybe the USHL or WHL, and they've all come back and said, you know what, I wasn't ready. I probably should have waited another year. And it's the same thing for kids leaving sometimes. You might not be ready. Don't rush the process. Make sure it's the right situation and you're comfortable with everything, all your surroundings, and then you can make that step. Because I think there's a lot of due diligence that needs to be done by you and the team you're looking at in order to take that move.
So if a kid does make that move too soon and ends up coming home, does that ruin their opportunity, or does that just make them more ready year?
I think you could also learn a lot from there. But I do think, you know, it obviously could throw, it's tough to schooling and stuff like that. It could throw things off, but, I mean, kids usually recover fine. But I think it doesn't really, you know, as long as you have the drive to continue to get better and develop and maybe your areas that maybe why you didn't make that team or left that team, maybe your skills were there, but your maturity wasn't there and you weren't ready to move away from home. So another year at home will definitely do you well, you know, and do you good to learn and grow up and mature. Or maybe you felt like you went there and your skills weren't up to par, so you need to go home and play more and get more touches and get the, you know, playing in critical situations. That's going to allow you to grow and develop for the next year. So, yeah, I think it works both ways. And sometimes kids just may never leave again after that because they just feel like this isn't what I want to do. So you find out all those scenarios once you're in this long enough and you see different players. But don't go somewhere just to go to a program to say you're AAA when you can play AA or you know, maybe in your backyard or even AAA backyard if unless you're absolutely in the right situation. I mean, there's organizations, not just in Colorado, but around the country, where they take kids to fill spots. And yeah, don't be one of those don't be a filler, man. You know, don't be a filler.
I've seen it, and unfortunately, I've been there. I've seen that you're a budget filler. Like, they need because you know, they scholarship the first two or three kids,
right,
and then they need that other kid because his check will clear more than they need his skill. And that's not fair to the kid. That's not fair to the parents. That's not fair to the team. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, no, it's a tough, it's tough. So I just look into all that and make sure you're, you know, and obviously you can handle it, but if anyone ever has questions, you're more than welcome to, you know, they can reach out through email to me or something and I could definitely help, you know, but I think you guys have it covered. You sound like you have a, you know, good knowledge about obviously everything in the process, and I think that's the most important thing. Those people need to lean on you guys to help them, you know, make those decisions.
Oh, I appreciate that. So, Evan, before we wrap up, you got more you want to add?
No, it's just interesting to hear as I kind of, I'm in the slow transition into kind of more of this type of stuff, so it was interesting to hear your perspective on the other end of it after going through all of it.
Yeah,
my pleasure, guys, and I enjoy it, so anytime you want to talk hockey, you know, just let me know.
Well, we're definitely going to have you on the show again soon, Angelo. Evan, Angelo, thank you guys so much for being on the show.
Good to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. My pleasure.
All right, that was the Utah Puck Report. Thank you so much for listening. The Utah Puck Report is a KSLSports.com podcast. And if you haven't subscribed yet, then you can. All you got to do is text the word puck to 57500.
And you can also catch us online, too, at kslsports.com and right there at the Arrow website, 1035thearrow.com.
That's awesome. And we want to thank Josh Tilton, our producer. He's the one that keeps us in line, keeps the things rolling. And he doesn't roll tape, as you would say.
He does not.
But he does produce the show in all the digital ways. So once again, thank you so much for listening to the Utah Puck Report.